What happened to El Nino and our wet weather? I guess summertime in Texas is officially here.
From El Paso, homebrew to Gatsby. From Amarillo, way down to San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. Talk about hot, man.
It is. It's hot.
Yeah, I looked at the forecast, and for the next 10 days, there is only a 20% chance of a cloud. And that's only one day. Now, that's bad. You know, we had a great a wet spring and a Memorial Day weekend. We'll never forget with all that rain. But after the 4th of July, it has really dried up, hasn't it?
Summer's finally here.
Amen. All right. Howdy, folks. Welcome to hour number two. If you're just tuning in, I'm Alan Warren, and last hour, if you're an RVer, you need to go and listen to the podcast, because from 5:30 to 6, we talked about a new mobile app that every RVer needs to put on their cell phone. It's free. And then from 5 to 5:30, we spoke with my buddy Super Guide. Yeah, down at Great Texas Hunts. Kind of brought us up to speed with what's happening in the way of white-tailed deer and their antler development right now. And a little bit of a forecast for the upcoming fall hunting season, which, by the way, drum roll, it's only 10 weeks from today.
Wow.
I mean, it's 10 weeks from today. So in just over 2 months, all those camo-clad folks are going to be helping out the rural Texas economies, having a lot of fun and doing a good thing for wildlife management. All right, I want to remind everybody that our podcasts are available. Not just this show, but every episode that we've done, every program. All you have to do is go to WOAI.com. On the upper right-hand corner, type in the word podcast.
And you'll see the whole list.
Yeah, it'll take you the whole page, everybody's different show, and look for me, and then you can click on...
It's simple to find you because you look like Keith, so everybody knows.
That's an old picture, by the way.
I know, very old.
It's an old one.
You actually had hair back then.
And I was thin.
No,
all right, this hour is always fun because we visit with Charlie Seal, our friend from the Exotic Wildlife Association, about really cool topics, success stories, and educational things that wildlife lovers enjoy. So let's go ahead and welcome Mr. Charlie Seal this morning, who happens to be just about a mile from the WOAI studios. Good morning, Charlie.
Why isn't he here?
Good morning, guys.
Well, because he's probably... Are you in the... Let's see.
What's a good way to put
this? Are you in your typical suite there in the your radio studio?
And, well, actually, I'm in the presidential suite here.
I know, but your radio studio is not the presidential suite.
It's it's my bathtub.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, no, I'm not in the bathtub this morning.
Oh, thank you.
The presidential suite up here at the Omni Colonnade.
Right on.
Had a great time with our annual hunting awards weekend. So, yeah, we're having a great time.
Well, before we get into why you're in San Antonio, what's going on at the Omni Hotel, let's talk a little bit about the weather. And, you know, ever since the 4th of July, it's really dried off, and maybe it's not as hot as normal, but it feels super hot because I think we had a cool spring.
Yes, very.
And first part of the summer. What's that doing to wildlife, Charlie Seal? How's it affecting them?
I tell you what, it's really having a tremendous effect on what's happening right now. And, the heat index is what's really bad. And especially right now, these does are raising their fawns. If they don't get up and feed like they normally would, so because the does are laying all day, and some of them not taking care of these babies. So, right now the forbs and the things for mama they're not being produced out there, even though the range is still pretty good. We've gone back to hitting the supplemental feed pretty heavy right now, and you and I talked about this about a week ago, Alan, and about some of the deer have kind of backed off eating so much, and I tell you what it is, it's the heat.
It's the heat?
I'm
with them, man.
They don't need, even though they need that the minerals and the protein, they don't get up because it's so hot.
It's like human beings when it's so miserably hot, it's just, ugh.
You can only have one helping.
Yeah. One giant plateful. But, and that reminds me, this time in the morning, a lot of those little fawns are big enough now, they're following mama, and mama's out looking for food. And as our friend Macy Ledbetter, the wildlife biologist, says, that these deer follow the green.
Yep.
And they follow the green strips along the side of the road, because that's where, when it does rain, the runoff goes on the side of the road. and they're if they're going to find something fresh to eat, a lot of times it's right next to where the cars are going 70 miles an hour past, and the doe may have gone through it for a year or two and doesn't step out very often to get hit, but those little fawns don't have a clue. So I'm seeing more and more white-tailed fawns becoming casualties of a, you know, so you got to be real careful when you're driving, right?
Yep.
Well, we've talked about this for the last, even back at Memorial Day, we were getting all this rain.
Yes, sir.
The does, they're kind of what we call road smart, but the little guys, they haven't learned. And so, like you said, we're starting to see more and more of these of the babies getting hit out there.
Yeah, sad deal. Well, let's go to and talk about the reason why you are in San Antonio with the Exotic Wildlife Association, Charlie.
Well, this is our annual hunting awards weekend. The EWA has a scoring system. It's the trophy game records of the world, and we honor this particular weekend each year all of those hunters that registered animals into the scoring system, and we honor them at a major event. And this year we happened to pick the Omni Colonnade in San Antonio. Last year we were up at the Embassy Suites in San Marcos, but we're here in San Antonio this year. I tell you what, it has been a packed weekend.
Nice.
Last night we had our casino night, and I'll tell you guys, we were on the 24th floor of the Colonnade, and
yeah.
I have never seen so many people hooping and hollering up there.
What'd you win?
I stayed out of there. There wasn't even room to get to a blackjack table.
Wow.
When you have to wake up this early in the morning to be on the radio, don't want to stay out too late.
That's
you want to make sure that you don't drink the wrong thing the night before you get on the radio. Kind of fogs your brain a little bit.
I don't know what you're talking about. Why are you looking at me, man?
And I noticed you weren't here either, Alex.
Well, I was smart. I had to get to bed early. I don't know how smart, but I did go to bed early. Hey, all right. Can the public, is this something that only EWA members can go to, or can the public drop by the Omni and just kind of poke their head in and see what's going on? And let's talk about that.
Well, you know, we've got the whole bottom floor of the Colonnade is full of exhibitors, and everything from ladies' jewelry, ladies' apparel, to knife makers, gun dealers. There's something for everybody, and we do welcome the public to come by and browse through our, our vendors' booths. We've got they're full inside the ballroom as well as out all through the hotel. So, no, this is not something that you have to be an EWA member. We will encourage.
Very cool.
We do encourage anybody to come by and check us out.
Well, I'm looking at the schedule, and it says that this morning from this morning you have a hunter safety course that takes place starting about 7:30 or 8 a.m., and then after that at 9 a.m. it says the exhibits open. So if somebody wanted to stop by the Omni here at Wurzbach, the Colonnade.
Yep.
On I-10,
yep.
9 o'clock, I guess, would be the right time to show up.
Sure, that would be great. All of our vendors will be back in their booths, and folks can come by, check us out. This afternoon starts right after lunch. We start the awards, the hunting awards, and then tonight we have a super, super grand auction lined out for everybody. And last night we had what we call our fun auction out. We raised some great needed money to help us with our all the things and activities that we do for the coming year. So we invite the public to come by and check us out.
Very nice. Charlie, do you ever have any protesters, that with the Exotic Wildlife Association, you guys do such great work, but all the events I've ever been to, I've never really seen any protesters.
Well, the only protester I've got is my wife when I get up to
30
to do the
show. Sign.
That's why you do the show from the bathtub.
She's got a sign, and I can see it already.
Alan, we've been very fortunate. We haven't had, and of course, knock on wood, we'll probably have them start
today. Yeah, because we just mentioned where you were, and come on down. We haven't had any protesters. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? If you are a protester, we invite you too. You may want
to,
but before you bring your signs and start acting crazy, you might want to just meet Charlie Seal and some of the Exotic Wildlife Association members. I think you may say, you know what? Those are pretty good people.
I'm not going to protest anymore.
Yeah, you might become a member of the EWA. So you have been warned, Charlie. We got to take a break. When we come back, I know that you wanted to share your radio time with somebody else, Travis Lowe from the North American Elk Breeders Association. And so can we do this? Can we take a break? We're going to bring up Travis, and you can be on the line with us. How's that?
With us too.
Hey, absolutely. That's a great organization. I'm the president of it, and I would share the time.
Is there anything you're not president of?
All right. Not yet. All right, folks, this is Alan Warren, the Lone Star Sportsman. We'll be right back. All right, so we're coming back from break, and I'm Alan Warren with Mr. T in the studio here at News Radio 1200 WOAI. And on the line, we have two people. We have the best-dressed man in radio,
nice
along,
robe.
And that would be Mr. Charlie Seal, joined by the most polite man on radio.
Yes, he is.
And that's Mr. Travis Lowe. He is the executive director of the North American Elk Breeders Association. Good morning, Travis.
Good morning. How are y'all doing this morning?
Fantastic.
We're doing good. I really mean it. You are the most polite young man.
Yes, you are
the executive director of this Elk Breeders Association. What are you doing in San Antonio, and why should somebody in Texas even care about elk?
Well, thank you for having me on this morning, and I was honored to be a guest at the awards banquet. So I've been with Charlie Seal on Thursday, giving him a hard time, but getting to know his members, and we're having a good time over here in San Antonio.
Well, you know, when I think of elk, I don't think of Texas, quite frankly. I think of, you know, the big, majestic, beautiful elk that you have in your mind's eye, you know, up in the Rocky Mountains. But it turns out that elk farming is very popular and getting more so, and it's another one of those alternative forms of agriculture, making a living off the land, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Elk ranching is becoming very prevalent all across the United States and Canada, and we have quite a bit of it in Texas and the South. And the markets are really good right now. They're exploding, and we're starting to see Texans use more and more elk products in their daily lives. And people like Charlie and I, we can't be happier.
Well, so how do elk fare in Texas with this 100-degree heat in the summertime? I would think with a long, shaggy fur coat, they wouldn't get by so well.
You know, they actually shed their winter coat just like a buck or a doe would. And, you know, they don't like the heat when it's this warm, but they're doing just fine. There's elk ranches all across Texas. Some of the biggest elk are actually raised in Texas, believe it or not.
Well, I believe it.
They do okay.
Yeah, I have seen some mighty large elk, big ones. So what makes elk special for Travis Lowe?
Well, one of the reasons why elk are just so such a good business to be involved with is because there's just such a versatile animal. There's multiple markets a person can be involved with if they're going to raise and sell elk. And that includes, in addition to the breeding stock market or a trophy market that somebody's probably pretty familiar with, but there's the elk meat industry, and then there's the antler industry. And the antler industry can be divided into two different parts, hard antler and then the velvet antler, which is the earlier form of the antler. And there's a bunch of different uses that the public is, that we're capturing their interest with.
Well, I know that pet owners, you know, folks with dogs I see sometimes in gas stations, literally up north, they have little things like displays where you can buy a piece of an antler, and dogs love to chew on those things.
Yes.
Sure. The hard antler market, traditionally, we might think of elk antler art or deer antler art with a chandelier or a lamp. We've been seeing, there's a lot of nice antler art here in our vendors at our conference this weekend. But the dog shoe industry, the pet industry, is really taking the hard antler and just blowing it wide open for the elk producers. And it's really working well. It's a long-lasting, it's a little bit more of a natural bone. So if you give a dog a piece of elk antler, it's a little bit more natural, it's longer-lasting, and
they like it.
Oh, man.
They like it.
Oh, man. Don't try to take it from a dog. Once they taste it, they want to get it. Charlie Seal, what's the connection between the North American Elk Breeders Association and here in Texas, the Exotic Wildlife Association? What's the connection here?
Well, the connection is that in Texas, the elk are considered livestock, and you know, even though they were native at one time to most of the states throughout the nation, they're still considered exotic livestock here in Texas. So the Texas Animal Health Commission regulates them, not the Parks and Wildlife. And so that's how EWA has become involved heavily with the North American elk breeders who represent, like Travis was saying, all the way up into Canada. And so, you know, it was just a natural mix that our two associations, kind of a, if you will, a really great marriage that we've had over the last few years. And I was fortunate enough to be elected their president this past year. And I tell you what, it's been a, you know, of course, it's been an easy job with Travis at the helm as their executive director. So, you know, it was just a great mix for us.
Well, Travis, you know, I mentioned alternative forms of agriculture. Why elk? Are they, I would think a big old animal like that with gigantic antlers would be difficult to kind of take care of compared to maybe a cow. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying.
We have to have special facilities for elk. You know, they're tall animals. They have a little jumping ability, so we have to have 8-foot high fence. And we have handling facilities, raceways, hydraulic squeeze chutes, just like a agriculture or a livestock person would have. So they're a different animal, but they're very powerful. You have to respect them. But if you have the right facilities, it's not a big deal at all.
Now, you're not capturing these elk out of the wild. These are essentially domesticated elk, aren't they? Many, many generations back that are living in these elk farms?
Absolutely. The North American Elk Breeders is actually a breeder registry organization, and I have to purchase breeding stock from other elk ranchers. I can do it across the United States. I can do it in Canada, just like a cow or a horse breeder would.
Okay. What about diseases and things like that, brucellosis and things that, you know, cows can get?
You know, elk can get brucellosis, but it's super rare. We have to do our normal protocol testing if we want to sell to certain jurisdictions, but they're naturally resistant to diseases. They have a very low mortality, and it really kind of helps the bottom line for an elk producer when you're not losing your livestock all the time.
Well, and they taste so good. You know, a lot of the upscale restaurants, they'll sell elk meat, and aren't elk more, they eat more grass than they do, like a deer. You can get a deer and taste it, and they have that gamey, nasty taste a lot of times, but elk seem to taste really good. Why is that?
I guess it's just the luck of the draw, but a lot of our elk, well, we're all grass-fed, and they're just really great on the grill. I'm a medium-rare kind of guy, and I'll put an elk on the steak or a steak on the grill, and we've been using more and more of that in our daily lives. It's a very health alternative, and the public's starting to learn that, just like the buffalo industry.
Yep.
And it's healthier than grilled chicken, actually. It's low in fat, low in cholesterol, and high in protein. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to throw some on the grill, but if you do, you'll be hooked, I promise you.
Yeah, I'm more of a rare. Just heat it up and let me eat it.
I'm with him. I'm
medium. It's really good stuff. Are there some things in our closing minute or two, are there some things that we can learn from elk breeders and the places that have these elk that can be beneficial for, quote-unquote, free-ranging wild elk? Are there some things that we can learn?
You know, our website has a wealth of information, and it's www.naelk.org. That's our association website. We have a lot of information on there for enthusiasts that just want to learn a little bit more about the elk industry and then our markets as well.
So if somebody was looking to set up just kind of thinking about it, maybe I'd ought to get some elk and start a new market, you would welcome those folks.
Amen.
I'd love to talk to them.
Good deal. All right, we're going to have to let you get, Travis. And Charlie, can you stay with us through the break in just a minute or so?
Absolutely. Be glad to go.
All right, Travis, thanks so much. And I will see you after a while there at the Omni in the Colonnade, okay?
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
You betcha. Charlie, that is really pretty cool about how, you know, elk are being utilized. And, you know, I mean, gosh, you've got their antlers. You've got their meat. And it looks like a market that is in its infancy. Instead of being oversaturated, it looks like there's a lot of room for growth with the elk market.
Well, there is, and I tell you what, the elk industry kind of, you know, back several years ago kind of faltered just a little bit, but now it has really exploded as people start learning the benefits, as Travis was pointing out about the elk industry. And you know, one thing that people probably don't understand, Alan, is that Texas the United States only provides about 15% of the venison that comes into this country. Most of it comes out of New Zealand, which is a, you know, that's a shame that we're not.
Amen.
Yeah.
We have so many regulations that our government places.
Charlie, we got to take a break. Please stick with us, folks. This is Alan Warren, the Lone Star Sportsman. Got to take a news break here in a second. We'll be right back. This is not a joke, folks. Next Saturday, I'm giving you a preview. We don't normally do this, but next Saturday, I just received an email, and this is so interesting. It brings up, in today's society, it brings up a lot of questions. So this was a well-thought-out email.
Yes, it was.
I'm going to read it to you real quick. It says, I've been thinking about your show and what's been going on these days. If I shoot a buck this coming season and I only have a doe tag, can I claim that the buck really wasn't a buck? I mean, maybe he always wanted to be a doe, but through no choice of his own, he was born with the physical attributes of a male. Yet, on the inside, he'd always known that he was truly a female. Just wondering if the game warden would buy it.
You know, I'm serious.
So next week, we're going to talk about that. I mean,
Wow.
I mean, that's a very deep.
He is on to something there, you know? I mean, seriously.
What do you think, Charlie Seal? Is that crazy or what?
I'm not even going to participate.
I will guarantee you next Saturday, we're going to start out at 5 a.m. We're going to ask people.
That's very well thought out. It really is.
I thought it was pretty cool. You know, we were going to break. We were talking. You just started talking about rules and regulations, and that when Travis Lowe said that these elk farmers, these elk operations provide to a venison market, but you said that it's only a 15%. Let me back up. In the 100% scheme of things of the elk that's sold in this country, only 15% of it comes from U.S. farms. 85% comes from New Zealand.
That's shocking.
And that, as we were, you know, before we went to break, that's exactly right. Because of the rules and regulations that this country has imposed on the venison market and the elk breed, not just the elk breeders, but wild game in general.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Alan, you know, we can't sell whitetail in Texas, whitetail venison, like they do in other states, because
mm-hmm.
our whitetail are not livestock. But that is a true statistic, is that only 15%, unfortunately, comes from the United States.
Sounds like an opportunity to me.
Well, it does, but, you know, the thing is, and that's one of the things that the Exotic Wildlife Association and North American Elk Breeders, we spend a lot of time in Washington working on these rules and regulations to try to ease them so that it's a little easier for an elk farmer or a deer breeder or something like that to get into the industry.
All right, let's don't bring a caller up yet. We've got a caller online, but I was just going to make a comment that if you rewind the clock and look back about 50 years ago, you had what I call the makers. You had the ranchers, the farmers, the producers, the hardworking people that did stuff, that worked every single day. They were the makers. But about 50 years ago, it seems like people said, you know what, making is hard, producing is hard. Let's become the regulators. Let's create an industry where we can get rich and we can tell these people that are hardworking how to live, what to do, what they can have, what they can own, how many they can have. And it's become this industry. And today, that little 50 years ago, it was a budding idea. And today, it is a money-making business, and it's forced great organizations like the EWA to have to raise money to fight them. And all we want to do is make and do the right decisions.
Well, you hit it right on the head, Alan. We're living in a country right now that is just absolutely taking away every single day. We're losing a little bit more of our rights and our freedoms, and that's what's become so important with associations like the EWA or the North American Elk Breeders and others. That we spend probably 80% of our resources trying to stay in business, and that's
wrong.
Yeah, it is.
It's just wrong, but it is a fact of life. And then when you say the truth, you know, like Donald Trump does, the truth according to him, and to me, he's a breath of fresh air. He may be an egomaniac. egomaniac and a, you know, bombastic personality and a turnoff to many. But what he says is unvarnished. It's the truth. And then, you know, we don't like people to say the truth. They have to say the politically correct truth, and it's a sad state. That's a subject for another day. Let's go ahead and go out to who we got?
Charlie.
Charlie. Charlie, good morning. Say hi to Charlie Seal.
Hello, Charlie Seal. How y'all doing?
Fantastic.
Good morning. Glad to have you on the radio this morning.
What can we do for you?
Sir, I've been listening to y'all for quite a while. I'm on my way to work down in Carson City, and I have a question. I'm going to take this in a little different direction, if you don't mind.
Okay, what's your question?
And this goes back a couple of shows. I went ahead and bit the bullet. I'm probably about a stone throw and a half away out of Mr. Tim's backyard.
Okay.
That gives you an idea where I live.
Okay.
And we're talking about the mamas, the does with the babies.
Yeah.
I went ahead and bit the bullet on a protein feeder, put it in the backyard, and watching the does eat and stuff. They eat, and they lay up against the fence. And all the little babies come on the other side of the fence and, you know, stay with the mama.
Right.
But is there something I can put on the other side of the fence, like a grain, alfalfa, coastal, something for them to keep?
Huh. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to do, Charlie?
Feed just them.
Feed them.
Just feed them.
What do you think, Mr. Seal?
Well, you know, Charlie, that's a great question, and I tell you what, these little guys, of course, they can't reach the tall feeders, but there's troughs that are made just for the younger deer, and right now all these babies are just starting to eat grain, the protein, and the corn like that so many people feed is not really good for these babies. They've got really, really delicate rumens, their stomachs and everything that digests
right.
The food. So you need that pellet or a sweet feed, if you will, to put in there, and they will munch on the hay and everything. So yeah, you can get a feeder that they can reach, and make sure they've got ample water and all of that, because they're just starting to do what deer do.
Yeah, they're learning to become independent,
right.
And you know, they're starting to eat stuff on the ground, and they get the leftovers. You know, the mature deer know the drill; they get the good stuff, and so the fawns who are being weaned right now, they're learning for the first time. Oh, that stick doesn't taste so good.
Yeah,
they're learning what to eat and how to do it. And when you can provide something that's nutritious, it tastes good, it's healthy, you're going to have nothing but healthier fawns and healthier deer. And you know what? Doesn't it feel good, Charlie, when you're out in your yard and you're looking at the deer coming in and feeding, knowing that you're doing something positive for wildlife?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's a bunch out there, isn't there?
There is. There's a whole lot.
We got a bunch. Yeah.
The neighbor down the street keeps all the bucks. I seem to have all of those, but that's okay.
Here in a couple of months, they're going to be looking for girlfriends, so you're going to be seeing a lot of bucks.
Really popular.
Hey, Charlie, thanks for calling this morning. Very, appreciate it.
Have fun at work.
Charlie Seal, a lot of people are choosing to feed wildlife now.
That's awesome.
Just to watch them. That's got to be a cool thing.
Well, it is, and you know, a lot of it, though, too, Alan, especially here in town over in Hollywood Park and places like that, they really become that's why they try to tell people in subdivisions like that not to feed the deers,
and
because they start congregating and they become more of a traffic hazard and they eat the folks' flowers,
plants,
and things like that.
They eat everything.
They don't know any different. They think that that's what they're supposed to be doing, and they do what deer do, and that's eat a lot. So,
yep.
But right now, I tell you, they need that nutrition. They need to get them ready for the. You know, even though it's 100 degrees today, fall is not that far off, and they're going to start needing that nutrition.
You know, it's so difficult that, you know, I've lived in these areas where you've got these white-tailed deer that come in your yard, and they're so beautiful to watch, and you feel compelled. I mean, they're beautiful. They're, you know, you feel like, oh, let me go ahead and get some feed, and you feed them, and you turn them into dependent animals, and those dependent animals make more dependent animals, and they're already overpopulated in these areas.
Yes,
and
are.
The problem is not feed them. The problem is management, but managing, you've got to remove some mouths.
And they won't let us do that in places like where I live.
So it's a difficult discussion, but one that absolutely has to be had.
Well, and you know, it's an age-old problem, and here inside the city limits, they try to, use
trappers and things like that to come in and remove those excess animals. But you know what? And the good thing about that, though, Alan, is when they do remove them, say, and I use Hollywood Park because that's where they seem to be doing a lot of the trapping, those animals, those whitetail, are moved to areas over, especially over into Del Rio, Brackettville, that get decimated by each year by either anthrax or EHD, things like that. They can move the excess animals over there. So, it kind of works out on both spectrums.
Right.
Well, I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard a story about some of these deer from Lakeway up in Austin, you know, which is also just overrun with whitetail deer, that the people and their intentions are good.
Sure
they don't want to, you know, kill these deer. They have this fantasy that if they trap them and transport them, that they'll be released into this fantasy land where they'll live happily ever after. But a deer that's raised and grown up in a neighborhood, jumping over 4-foot fences and feeding on your petunias or whatever you grow, is not the same kind of deer that lives out in the wild. And those deer have a difficult time in surviving. And I heard that most of those deer don't make it 30 days. They end up getting eaten by a coyote, getting run over. So not sure if it's true or not. All right, Charlie Seal, stick around. One more segment to go. I want to talk with you about the black buck antelope after the break and more about what's going on today at the Omni Hotel in San Antonio. Stay with us.
Know that guy.
All right, everybody. Alan Warren, the Lone Star Sportsman. Mr. T is right in front of me here.
Yes, I am.
And right down the road is our good friend Charlie Seal. He's the executive director of the Exotic Wildlife Association, who is having their annual Trophy Game Records of the World Awards banquet this weekend. And the public is invited to go out to the Omni Hotel, the Omni at the Colonnade. So out on I-10, I think it's the Wurzbach exit.
Get off at Wurzbach to stay on the access road, and it's on your right hand, so I cannot miss it.
If you are interested in looking at some beautiful trophy, you know, game mounts, taxidermy work, and seeing some, walking through some booths and seeing things they've got on sale and that have to do
and
with wildlife
really cool
and
people.
Home decor and meet some really great people.
Really good people.
Going out to the Omni at the Colonnade. All right, Charlie, the Exotic Wildlife Association has done so many great things for wildlife. I want to talk specifically about one little animal, one species that is such a success story here in Texas, and that is the black buck antelope. Can you tell us in a couple of minutes, you know, where the black buck antelope is from, how they got here, and how they're doing here compared to where they originated?
Well, the black buck antelope is, of course, that's our, you know, that's what's our symbol for the Exotic Wildlife Association. That's our logo. And that, you know, many, many years ago, they're actually from India and Pakistan. That's what that's the country they're native to. And there's very few of them left over there anymore. But anyway, they were brought in, like so many of the different exotics, into the zoos and things like that. And back when the zoos were propagating these animals, and they would give their excess or sell their excess animals to ranchers up here. And that was kind of the beginning, one of the first known exotics that came into this country. And they just absolutely, the terrain, the climate of Texas, and especially South Texas and Central Texas, their populations exploded. And they're actually the females will have two babies a year. They'll be nursing one and be pregnant with another one. So they're very prolific, and the populations can get away from you very quickly.
Wow.
If you don't manage them.
A lot of people, they say, well, why aren't they doing well in India? And there's one word for that, and it's called people. Let me give you an example. The country of India, the continent, I guess, of India, is about one-third the size of the United States.
Correct.
But it's got four times the population and one-third the size.
That doesn't work well.
Human beings and habitat destruction are the number one, and it's the number one reason for wildlife decline in populations around the world. Texas offers not only great climate, but space, and these animals need space, and the people that provide that space are members of the Exotic Wildlife Association that, you know, that we talk about every single week. These are small animals. A full-grown one may weigh 100 pounds, I guess, live weight. But they're stunningly beautiful. They've got attitudes, and when you see them, a big black buck male, which, again, it's 100 pounds, strutting around with his harem of girlfriends, which they do, you know, they're very territorial.
Wow.
They fight like crazy, don't they, Charlie, when they're in the rut?
Well, they do, and they do mark off their territories, and they will absolutely have a tremendous fight if any other male comes in during that rutting. Well, it doesn't even have to be during the rut.
Just any time, right? Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things, Alan, that's another success story of the Exotic Wildlife Association. We shipped I can't even tell you how many we ship back over to India, and that's the only reason they even have any today. You know,
wow.
Their religion forbids them from eating cattle and things like that, but they will eat the fire out of those black bucks.
Mm.
And so that's, you know, it's been a success story for us. And but they have done, the population's exploded here in Texas. And we have a lot of free-ranging black buck, too. So I know everybody's familiar with that little animal, but they're also great table fare. And like you said, there's not a lot of meat on them, but there's nothing like, you know, a black buck pate, if you will.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you see, and I saw for the first time 5 or 6 years ago, a pair of black buck males squaring off fighting. You know, you may have seen white-tailed deer, and a white-tailed deer fight can last a long time, but most of the time, not really, just a few seconds. A black buck fight can last for 30 minutes and longer.
Wow.
And they don't care if you're 50 yards away from them, folks. They are focused on destroying the
really?
Other black buck. And I've got some of the greatest video ever of black buck fights. And the other cool thing I knew about black bucks, or learned about black bucks, is that when the dominant male, the alpha, is killed or somebody harvests them, the next alpha male in the herd changes colors and turns darker because he becomes the head breeder.
Wow, really?
Well, you're right about that. That's the sign of a mature black buck. And this time of the year, they're not into their what we call the rut. They'll start here in about September. They start turning black again. And this time of the year, they're kind of a brownish color. They lose that black hair. But you're right about that. The darker the black buck, the more dominant in the herd he is. And so that's why you see all these other little guys, they'll stay in bachelor herds. They don't want to cross over into the alpha male's territory.
But, you know, I've seen some really big, giant black bucks that are not that dark. And I learned that that's just because they're not super prolific breeders. We only have about a minute and a half, Charlie Seal, left. Let's tell everybody once again about what's happening today at the Omni Hotel at the Colonnade and get everybody to come out and check you out.
Again, it's our annual Trophy Game, which is the World's Hunting Awards Banquet Weekend, and we've got some really cool exhibitors and exhibits down here. We've got taxidermy contests going on. Come out, check it out.
Nice.
You might even find you a taxidermist that you know, that you can do business with if you're into that. And we invite the public to come by and check all of our events out today. And you know, and I know we're going to see you in just a little while, Alan. We invite you to come on down, Tim.
Okay.
Yeah, it is going to be a lot of fun. I know that a lot of kids are going to be taking the hunter safety course.
Which they should.
You know, and I think everybody
should,
you know, even big kids like us ought to take a refresher course.
Amen.
It's a lot of fun. So that's at the Omni Hotel at I-10 and Wurzbach in the Colonnade.
In the Colonnade, yeah.
Here in San Antonio. And the public is welcome starting at 9 o'clock. The exhibit's open. Y'all need to come down and check out the Exotic Wildlife Association. Charlie, thank you so much.
Hey, it's been another great weekend, Alan. Look for, you know, it goes by so fast. And,
yeah, it does.
We look forward to talking with you and Tim this next week.
You got it.
We'll see you later.
We'll see you in just a bit. That was Mr. Charlie Seal with the Exotic Wildlife Association. Folks, they bring you this show, and we are grateful for that, but more so we're grateful for the work that they do. These are the producers. These are the people that put up the money, the time, the sweat, the all the stuff that's required for these animals to survive and thrive. And if it weren't for the Exotic Wildlife Association, many of these animals would be gone from the face of the earth. So I encourage everybody to check them out. You can find out more information if you don't want to come down to the Colonnade.
But you should.
You know, you can go to myewa.org or check them out on Facebook. They got a pretty cool Facebook page, and they post pictures from time to time about these animals. You go, what the heck is that?
It's a big buck, because I like big bucks. I cannot lie.
Yeah, so do I. Speaking of that, I just posted on the Great Texas Hunts Facebook page, and that's exactly what I said. All right, folks. Hope to see you at the Colonnade in just a bit. Bye-bye.
There ain't nothing like it. One more thing to say. Feels like a fish in Texas day. Hey, feels like a fish in Texas day.